Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 201, actually 202. And we're going to continue now with chapter 46. We began that chapter last time, and we came all the way to verse 4. And at this point, Jacob and his family are on their way down to Egypt, and he goes to Beersheba. And the reason why he goes there, for one thing, that's on his way to Egypt. And the second main reason for it was the fact that the altar of God was erected there the first time by Abraham, and then Isaac was there too to offer sacrifices to God. Now obviously in those days they had no temple, they had no tabernacle, and so those were the places that became the central locations of worship of the fathers. And so before he goes down to Egypt, he is going to come before God, and God comes to him in the visions of the night, as we read, and he basically tells him that he should not fear to go down to Egypt. After all, he's the one that was orchestrating this whole matter, this whole scenario with the family of Jacob, with Joseph being sold into Egypt and so forth. And so this is what he tells him here. He comes to him at night and he says, Jacob, in verse 1 and 2, and he says, "Here I am." And he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there," in other words, when you go down to Egypt, "I will make there, your family a great nation." And as we mentioned, that Israel became a great nation, not in the land of Israel. And even when they came back out of Egypt into the land of Israel, as big as they were as a nation, Israel really became a great nation, or many nations, when they were taken to captivity. So in the place of captivity, this is where God makes his people great nations, and into the new lands that God gave them. The ultimate one is, obviously, when he brings them back at the end of time to the land, they are going to be few, the remnant, but then he said he's going to increase them as the stars of heaven, and they're going to be as if they have never been diminished. In other words, now in their own land, they're going to be such a great nation, and they will get to the point where the land is not enough for them, and probably by that time they are going to migrate again to their own lands, at least, you know, many of them, but that would remain the headquarters of all the nations of Israel. And so this is what he's saying to him. "There I will make you a great nation, and I will go down with you into Egypt." See, what does that mean, you know, for God to go down with him into Egypt? God is everywhere. What he's telling here is something that became a reality in the life of Israel. That even though he punished them now and then, even though he sent them into captivity, he always was with them. He never forsook them. He never got rid of them, and never, like the Gentiles told them, which are all lies, basically in the last 2,000 years, the lies of the great whore that many of us still believe, unfortunately, to this day, that God just got tired of his people and got rid of them, and he decided, well, I've had it, and now I'm going to get me another wife, another woman, and that's going to be so-called the church that is made of all the nations of the earth, and so everybody's welcome to it. Well, that's one of the major lies that began to be taught 2,000 years ago, totally contrary to the teachings of the apostles, of God, of Jesus Christ, of all of his prophets from beginning until the end. It's only the ignoramuses that believe this kind of lies because they don't know the scriptures as they should. And God made it very plain. He will never, never, ever, in spite of all the sins and iniquities of Jacob, he will never forsake him. This will always be his people, his chosen people, his wife, and none else. Now, true, he made it always plain, and that's also part of the scriptures, that he's going to also call some others among the nations, but that's only sort of a minority. And he's going to graft them into the commonwealth of Israel, which is something he's been doing since the beginning of time, from the days of Abraham. But as far as a nation and a people and a bride and a wife, Israel always was, is, and will always be for eternity. And so that's going to be one of the major deceptions that God is going to expose at his coming. And Babylon basically is the one that was teaching that, and Babylon is going, you know, is going to be the one exposed for all these lies that she taught all mankind, that God not chose them. After that comes another religion, Islam, and they claim to be the one. They claim, you know, claim to be the people of God, the only people of God, and all the rest are, you know, went by the wayside. So this kind of lies has been going around for quite a while. And so he makes it very plain in verse 4, I will go down with you into Egypt. And throughout the scriptures he made it very plain. He will never leave Jacob, never forsake him. And I will also surely bring you up again. So not only I will go down with you, you see, into captivity, because obviously he knew what Israel would go through for a while, and also later on, when he sent them into captivity, he basically made the same promises. He's going to go down with them, and he's going to bring them back. So wherever they are, wherever his wife is, even in rebellion, captivity, he's going to be with her to the end, because he's a faithful God. And he does not change, and he made it very plain. And so he said, I will go down with you, now I'm going to also bring you back. And that became an eternal promise for the people of Israel, and it is to this very day, and it is into the future also, with all those who ever died and will be resurrected in the second resurrection. God is going to bring them back out of the grave, out of the land, you know, in which they were buried for the past 2,700 years, and he's going to bring them into the land of Israel. And that's what you read basically in Ezekiel 37, the Valley of the Dry Bones. And so we read here in verse 5, and Jacob rose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob their father and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And it's not that Joseph sent it, Pharaoh sent it, because he's the one that got involved, because God put it in his heart to do it. You see, God was orchestrating all those things. And in the future, God said he's going to do just the same. He's going to put it in the hearts of all the leaders, of all the government leaders, of all the peoples all around the earth, to bring his people with their own property, you know, their own vehicles, whatever they have, in ships and in mules and horses, whatever they have available, they are going to take. And if they don't have those things, God says they're going to take the children of Israel and put them on their shoulders, or carry them. So that's what you see here, what God did with Pharaoh, and that was only an example of what was going to be in the future. And he will bring all of his people back to him. And so, now Jacob, the family of Jacob, is taken with wagons that came all the way from Egypt to take him back to Egypt. The chariots of Pharaoh, and the wagons of Pharaoh. And they took their cattle and their goods, which they had gotten in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt. And Jacob and all of his seed with him, his sons and his sons' sons, his grandchildren that is, with him and his daughters. And he had only one daughter, so he's speaking about all his granddaughters actually. And his sons' daughters. And all his seed brought he with him into Egypt. And that's the way God wanted it, all of them. And history tells us that some of them did not go with them. And that's basically some of the children of Judah from Zerah. Zerah had two sons, Perez and Zerah. And so Perez went down, and many in Zerah, probably most of them, did not go down to Egypt. And so we read here, and these are the names of the children of Israel who came into Egypt. Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanoch and Phallu and Hezron and Carmi. That's the firstborn, and the sons of Simeon, the secondborn, Jemuel and Jamin and Ohad and Jachin and Zohar, and Shaul, the son of the Canaanitish woman. So here you see an injection of a Canaanite blood into the family of Jacob, and obviously also Judah married a Canaanite, and then his daughter-in-law was also a Canaanite, so there is a mixture there already. In other words, there is no purity in the race. And those women, obviously, if they became a part of the family of Jacob, they had to worship the gods of Jacob. They could not bring their own idols with them. And yet God told them, in the future, don't bring any Canaanite women that are going to bring a false religion, a foreign religion, into your family, because you're going to have problems if you do it. And Israel never obeyed that command. So it was not because they were of a different race and the Canaanites were of a dark race, but it was because of the idol worship that was involved in it. And so the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, he has only three. From these three came three divisions of the family of Levi. and each single one of them was given specific tasks in the tabernacle and after that in the temple. And the sons of Judah, Er and Onan, and Shelah and Perez, and Zerah. So he had five here, but Er and Onan died in the land of Canaan, and the sons of Perez were Hetzron and Hamul. And then he goes to verse 13, which talks about Issachar, and then you ask yourself, whatever happened to the sons of Shelah and Zerah? How come they have mentioned here in the genealogy? And even down the road, when other genealogies were taken, they're not mentioned either. They mention part of them in the wilderness later on of Zerah. And what happened here, you know, history picks up the story and tells us that since Perez became the heir of his father, and you remember how the two of them were born, there's a story about them. When they were born, they were twins, and Zerah put out his hand. He was going to come first. And so the maid put red thread, purple, whatever, scarlet, on his hand to signify that this was the firstborn. And then he pulls his hand back in, which is a very unusual thing. And his brother Perez just bursts forth and comes out. And that's the reason why it was called Perez, to burst forth. And that's very typical of the Jewish race, pushy. But not pushy in the sense of only negative pushy. In other words, they're the pioneers. They go first. They're the adventurous one. They're not afraid. That's what the lion is. And so see these qualities. You know, if they're used properly, you accomplish an awful lot. And that's one reason also why Judah was chosen to be the royal son and the one to carry the scepter. Because the king in those days was always the first one that went ahead. He made the decisions, you know, he went forward. You know, he had to make the hard decisions. He had to be pushy in that sense. And not shy, not bashful, or he cannot be a leader. And so you see a lot of those things here. Well, anyway, Perez became the royal son, which means that he was going to get the scepter, and the knowledge was already there that the royal son, as he was called even at that time, not only by the Israelites, but by others, and we have historic records of that, Perez received that title as the royal son after his father, and Zerah was supposed to be the firstborn, you know, but he was not really technically the firstborn in the full sense because only his hand went out. Well, anyway, but he was still considered as the firstborn because of that. He obviously was pushed away from that office that his brother was going to get, and he was not happy about it. And so since he was not going to have any future in that reality, and he wanted to have his own future for his own children, and so history tells us that they basically took off. They never went down to Egypt, and probably even longer before that, they just took off and separated themselves from the rest of the family, and then they ended up in the Caucasian Mountains, and then from there down into Europe, Spain, and after that the British Isles and Ireland. Anyway, that's historic information that people can find out in different sources. And that's the reason why they're not even mentioned here. And so only the sons of Perez are mentioned. And there are just two of them, Hetzron and Hamul, didn't have many children at this point. And the sons of Issachar, Tola and Puah and Eov, and which is very interesting because that's very close to the name of Job. It's not the same one. This one is Job. And the other one that a book was written about was Eov, or Job in Hebrew. Now that is in English. And Shimron, and the sons of Zebulun, Sered, and Elon, and Jahleel. Of course, these are all, many of them have meanings in Hebrew. In English, you translate it, you don't know what it means. But I'm not going to spend time now describing the meanings of all of them. We already did with the sons themselves of Jacob in an earlier lesson. And so these are the sons of Leah, whom she bore unto Jacob in Padan Aram. That means all of them were born in Syria, what became later on Syria. Aram at the time, that's a biblical name for Syria, and only the Greeks later on gave it that name. And the reason why they did, because some of the children of Abraham from Keturah that came from Ashur. You see, there were two Assyrians, and a lot of people are not aware of that. There are two Assyrian people. One is from Abraham, from Ashur. Or they were called Ashurim in the plural. And he was his grandson from Keturah. And so he lived in that territory, and then they partially integrated with the Assyrians because they had many similar qualities. And then later on, they migrated together into Europe, Central Europe. And the people of Ashur, who went before that to places like Troy, you know, that was one of their cities, and they established the Hittite Empire. They've taken over from the Hamitic race. They were called the Hittites. And then they became known in history as the Hittite Empire. Of course, they didn't call themselves Hittites. But others recognized them as such because they were in that territory, which is in Turkey. And from there they went to Rome, and some of them were responsible for the establishment of the Roman Empire. And the historic story, I don't know if it is true, but they were talking about the two sons that were suckled by a wolf. That's supposed to be the ones that established the earlier Republic of Rome. Well, they were children of a son of Ashur. And so, children of Abraham find themselves into Italy, and they establish the Roman Empire. And after that, others migrate over there, like children of Edom, and they become a part of it, and even many of the children of Israel make a great part also of Italy, and to this very day, many of them are still there, especially northern Italy, and then the western part of it, central part of it, and some enclaves in the south, which means that many of the people of Italy, they're not really Italians in the sense of Gentiles, but many of them are Israelites that just took on the Roman religion. Well, these are historic facts. I'm not going to go through that. Otherwise, it would take an awful lot of time to do it. But anyway, just little tidbits here and there about them. And so we find here the children of Leah. These are the ones that were mentioned. And then his daughter Dinah. And all the souls of his sons and his daughters were 30 and 3. And the sons of Gad, Ziphion and Haggai, or Haggi in Hebrew, and later on you read about the prophet Haggai. That prophet was called Haggai. This one is called Haggi, which is basically the same. And Hag means feast. And Hag also means one that goes in circle. You know, when you circle, you call it Hug in Hebrew. And so the two are related. And then he had these children, Ziphion and Haggi and Shuni and Itzbon and Eri and Arodi and Arerli. In other words, Gad had a lot of kids. And the sons of Asher, Imna and Ishva and Ishvi and Beraya and Sarah, their sister. There is a sister mentioned along with the sons. And the sons of Beraya, Heber and Malkiel. And these are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter. And she bore this unto Jacob, 16 souls. And the sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin. And unto Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim. And how many were born after that? They are not mentioned, because Jacob, when he adopted Manasseh and Ephraim as his own sons, so he can transfer the birthright directly to them. He told Joseph that these two are going to be mine, but as for the rest, whatever other children you're going to have, they're going to be yours. And so they would be, you know, part of Joseph, but they would not be Ephraim or Manasseh. But later on, if he had children, we don't know. We don't have any records of that. They joined the children of Ephraim and Manasseh if they were there. And so he had these two. And so Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, whom Osnat, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore unto him. And the sons of Benjamin, notice, Benjamin was very prolific. He's the youngest one. Look how many kids he has already by the time he goes down to Egypt. And the sons of Benjamin, Bela, and Becher, and Ashbel, and Gera, and Naaman, and Ahi, and Rosh, and Mupim, and Hupim, and Arad. But 10 kids. They were very prolific. And ironically, Benjamin, you know, was a big tribe, and then he became a very small tribe. And then at one point, there were only 600 Benjamites left. after Israel went to war against them and basically destroyed all of Benjamin with the exception of those few. And then they had to give them wives so they can continue to be as a tribe and not be destroyed. And then verse 22, we read, these are the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, and Benjamin was the only one that was born in the land of Israel. All the rest were born in Paddan Aram. And later on, the Babylonian Empire, but at the time was Aram was not called Babylon because it was up there, northwest. Only later on it became a part of Babylon when it became an empire. And later on it was called Syria. And the Syria, as I mentioned earlier, the children of Abraham from Assyria, from Ashur or Ashurim, from Keturah, they migrated. And the part of them that remained behind are still there to this very day. And you find minority of them in Syria. And that's where Assad, the former president, obviously his son of Bashar, they come from this... from this people. In other words, it's the sons of Abraham from Keturah. And so the Greeks call them the white Syrian in contrast to the Hamitic race that was there. And so they lived with them and, you know, there was a little mixture among them, but generally they stayed by themselves, and that's why you find in Syria today there is that minority. And they call them the Alevim in Syria today. And that minority is basically is not Hamitic, is not the typical Arab. You know, they are white, and they look, many of them look just like their brethren that went down to what became later on as Austrian. You know, the Austrian people. These are the same people from Ashurim, and the other ones basically that you read later on in Isaiah 19, that there's going to be a trio of three nations, and people not understanding the difference between these two Assyrias, they think that they are the same people that went into Germany. And God there talks about another Assyria, the one who are today in Syria, the one that were called by the Greeks the white Syrians. And these are the children of Abraham from Keturah, from Ashurim. And in Isaiah 19, God says that he's going to have a trio of nations there, Egypt in the south, Israel in the center, and Syria, as he calls them, in the north. And most people are not familiar with the historic background here. They think that it's talking about Germany. Well, Germany is not going to be one of those trio nations. God is not talking about them. He's talking about the Assyria that came out of Abraham. In other words, what you're going to find there, the wife of Abraham, Hagar, is in the south. Her children, that's the main nation, of course, in other places also. And his first wife, Sarah, is going to be in the center, that is her descendants, Isaac and then Jacob. And then in the north, there will be Assyria, which would be of his wife, Keturah. So his three wives that he had there, their descendants are going to be right there. And this is going to be the trio that Isaiah talks about. He's not talking about God, you know, God is not going to bring Germany over there and put them in the land that was given to the son of Abraham, Ashur. And as Josephus tells us, that the land of Assyria was named after this Ashurim, while the other one lived nearby, and so people got mixed up, not knowing the detail and the difference between these two. Anyway, that's a different story again here. And so we read, all these people came down to Egypt, and in verse 22, these are the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob. All the souls were 14. That is Joseph and his two children. The wife is not mentioned as one of them. And Benjamin and his 10 sons. And so then we read about the verse 23, and the sons of Dan, Hushim, had only one son. And the sons of Naphtali, Jahaziel, and Guni, and Jezer, and Shilem. And these are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave unto Rachel his daughter, and this she bore unto Jacob. Now, those people who are Irish today, they don't think about this kind of names. You know, these are the names of their forefathers. You know, they may sound to be a little bit strange, but then even when you look at the history of England and the Irish people, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, their names were totally different from what they are today. And so these were only seven souls. In verse 26, all the souls belonging to Jacob that came into Egypt, that came out of his loins, besides Jacob's sons' wives. In other words, the wives were not mentioned in this genealogy. All the souls were 66. And so if you were to put all together, you know, all the wives and then all their concubines and then all their servants, and all that, it was quite a big entourage, probably numbering the thousands. And the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were two souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob that came into Egypt were 70. 70. Good number. And he sent Judah before him unto Joseph. Now, you would think, you know, why not send Reuben? He's the firstborn. Well, Judah, the one that came from, you know, and his son Peretz, and you see, they have those qualities. They're the pioneers. They're the adventurers. They're the ones that push forward. They're the ones that later on, God said, you know, should lead Israel into the conquest after Joshua. It's not for without a reason that God chose Judah. There are certain qualities there that God wanted to see in this man that he's going to choose as a royal son of whom the Savior will come. And so he sent Judah before him unto Joseph to show the way before him unto Goshen. And Judah became the spokesman. And they came into the land of Goshen, and Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel his father to Goshen. And he presented himself unto him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said unto Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen your face, that you are yet alive. And of course God was going to give him another 17 years after that, so he was not about to die at that point. Not after seeing him all this time. Well, you know, Jacob thought he was going to die, didn't realize how long he's going to live. And it's interesting, his own father too, Isaac, he passed on the blessing to his sons when he thought that he was going to die, and he lived another, you know, a long time after that. He lived to 185. And probably another, 40 or 50 years after that time. So Jacob here thinks that he's going to die too. And verse 31, and Joseph said unto his brethren and unto his father's house, I will go up and tell Pharaoh, and will say unto him, my brethren and my father's house, who were in the land of Canaan, are come unto me, and the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of cattle, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And it shall come to pass when Pharaoh shall tell you, or shall call you, and shall say, what is your occupation? That you shall say that your servants have been keepers of cattle from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptian. Now why they developed that kind of an attitude, we don't know here. We're not told here at this point, but you look into the history and you find out some information about it. Now, what is interesting here, that you're talking about a pharaoh that was not a native pharaoh. In other words, this dynasty that ruled in the days of Joseph were the Hyksos. They came from north, land of Canaan, and they basically took over that area. And that's the reason why you find out that after Joseph died, this dynasty basically was toppled by the native Egyptians. And so obviously the new king that rose, who was a native Egyptian, he did not know Joseph, because it was another dynasty. But these shepherds, they were shepherd kings. They came and took over Egypt and ruled over it, and yet they seem to have developed the same, you know, same feeling and dislike of the Egyptians, the native Egyptians, against foreigners in general, and in particular against the herdsmen. And one reason that you can understand why they do feel like that about shepherds, because, mind you, the Egyptians were idol worshippers in a greater way than others, and they worshipped animals, just like you find in India. They worshipped animals and they looked upon them as gods. And that was one reason why God also destroyed the cattle of Egypt, because they were regarded as some of the gods of Egypt. And so obviously they did not like people that that used animals. And yet the Egyptians had to eat animals also, but at the same time they disliked anybody who was in this business. And so Joseph had in mind to get them to a land where it was fertile, and therefore all the cattle of Egypt was there. And this way they could be there also. What he didn't think about is what God had in mind. And we're going to find out exactly, on top of that, what is it that God had in mind in terms of the land of Goshen? Why were they going to be placed there? See, God is still orchestrating everything that is happening here. And so in chapter 47, we read in verse 1, "Then Joseph went in and told Pharaoh and said, 'My father and my brethren and their flocks and their herds and all that they have are come out of the land of Canaan. And behold, they are in the land of Goshen.'" You know, this is where he sent them, because that was a fertile land. You know, when you look at Egypt, it's basically a desert land. So obviously when they come with all their cattle, and there are many of them, he's naturally going to send them to the area where there is soil and land. And so he takes the five brothers, and we read in verse 3, and as he presented them to Pharaoh, and verse 3, "And Pharaoh said unto his brethren, 'What is your occupation?' And they said unto Pharaoh, 'Your servants are shepherds, both we and our fathers.' And they said unto Pharaoh, 'To sojourn in the land are we come, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is sore in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, we pray thee, let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen.'" Because that's exactly what Joseph told them to say to him, and that was a land that was fertile. But look what happens here. "And Pharaoh spoke unto Joseph, saying," and it's interesting that he's speaking to Joseph, and apparently Joseph's standing right there next to him, so he's addressing him instead of his brothers. And he speaks to Joseph, saying, "Your father and your brethren are come unto you." And yet, mind you, Pharaoh is the one that was also involved in it and commanding them to come, you know, that's the language they use, to come to Egypt. And so he says, "Your father and your brothers are coming to you. The land of Egypt is before you." All of it, mind you. Total open hospitality. "In the best of the land, make your father and your brethren to dwell. In the land of Goshen." That was the best of the land. "In the land of Goshen, let them dwell. And if you know any able man among them, then make them rulers over my cattle." And now he's elevating the brothers of Joseph also to high offices, at least in charge of his property. And you can see how God is working out this whole matter. From people that who could have starved to death, people who were in the land of Canaan, here they are, the rulers of the property of Egypt. And they could dwell anywhere they wanted. And obviously the best land was the land of Goshen. So you see how God was planning all these things to begin with. And so when he says to Jacob earlier, "I will go down with you," here you see what it means, as well as many other things. And so when he went down also with the children of Israel as they went into captivity, first by Assyria, he was with them and he blessed them in their lands. And they later on became empires, a couple of empires there. What is known as the Parthian and the Scythian Empire, or empires, and they controlled areas from China to the borders of the Roman Empire. They became mighty nations. God went down with them, in spite of them, in spite of the fact that many of them were, you know, disobedient and ignorant. He went down with them, and then later on, he sent the disciples to them directly to bring them back. Of course, only few responded, the majority did not. But nevertheless, God never forsook his people, and he had never done it. Of course, when Judah went into captivity, God went down with them too. And he gave great favor to Daniel and his friends and many others down the road throughout history, in spite of their, you know, of themselves, you know, of their own iniquities and the iniquities of Israel. God never forsook Jacob. And to this very day, he had never done it. And so he's going to bring them back also into the land. You see? God is where his people are. And this is what we see here now. He's with them, and so they are elevated to higher offices. And Joseph, verse 7, brought in Jacob his father and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And when Jacob blesses, it's not empty words, you see. Because of the kindness of Pharaoh, obviously God is going to use this blessing to multiply and bless Pharaoh with many things. And Pharaoh As time goes by, we'd know that also on a personal basis, and we'd know more about the God of this. Obviously, by now, Joseph told him about his God, and he's aware of his God. And Jacob is going to tell him more things. So you see a wonderful relationship here between the people of Israel, the people of Pharaoh, the people of Egypt, of whom obviously the Egyptians are natives, but then this dynasty is not a native dynasty, but then there are many of them that came down from the land of Canaan, other places like that, and controlled this area for a while. And God was blessing all of them. In verse 8, and Pharaoh said unto Jacob, how many are the days of your years of your life? And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojournings are 130 years. That's how old he was at this time. And mind you, and Joseph at this point was already 39, which means that from that you find out very quickly that when Jacob was 91, you see, that's when Joseph was born. So he was an old man when Joseph was born. And he said, I'm 130 years, few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. Jacob encountered an awful lot of problems, unlike his father Isaac, who had much more peaceful life. And so he says there were few and evil. And they have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. His father, his own father Isaac, was 185. And he and his grandfather Abraham was 175. And here he's 130 and he thinks that he's going to die any day. And so Jacob blessed Pharaoh again and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. And Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt. So now they had a possession that belonged to them in the best land of the land of Ramses. And later on, 430 years later, this is where they departed from the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. So now, Pharaoh is the one giving a part of his land as a possession to Israel. And there, you know, there is something interesting about it, because when you go into prophecy, into the future, in the days of the prophet Isaiah, God is revealing something very interesting in terms of what is going to happen in the future when God brings back all the tribes of Israel to their land that is coming, and the coming of the Messiah of Israel, the Redeemer, the Savior, Jesus Christ. He said in chapter 19 in Isaiah that the day will come when there are going to be five cities in the land of Egypt that are going to speak the land of Canaan. Now, the land of Canaan, the people of Israel, you know, that was Hebrew. And if five cities in the land of Egypt are going to speak that land, that means that it's going to be still a part, it's going to become a part of Israel later on. And at least that's an indication in that direction. And that could very well be this very land that at this point Pharaoh is giving to the children of Israel. And from God's point of view, as God told Abraham to begin with anyway, and later on he repeated that in the days of Moses, that the territory he's going to give to the land of Israel is going to be from the Red Sea. You see, which included the Nile, in other words, all the way to the Nile, from the Red Sea to the Euphrates. And so that territory, including the entirety of the Sinai Desert, and then the part of Egypt, the fertile part of it, of course God is going to bless the rest of the land too, is going to be given to the land of Israel, to the people of Israel. So here you see the first installment here, so to speak, of that piece of land is given by the command of Pharaoh, and the children of Israel possess this land. What they didn't realize as generations went by, that one of these days this land is going to be theirs in the future and forever, at least the forever of planet Earth, is as long as human beings are physical beings. And so this is what we read here in verse 12. And Joseph sustained his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to the need of their little ones, because mind you, there was a famine, so they had to go to the store. And Joseph was the supermarket of everybody. And just like today, Joseph is a supermarket of the world. That's where you find supermarkets in this land more than any other place on the face of the earth. And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished, not only Egypt, but also Canaan. You see, and that Canaan basically was under the jurisdiction of Egypt at the time. Because, mind you, many of these shepherd kings came from that very territory. So they were warriors, and they basically subdued this whole territory, and they annexed Canaan to Egypt and other lands also. And these two lands and others around them languished by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the corn which they brought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. Now, this is a part of the blessing that you see that God is blessing Pharaoh. Now, he's the richest man on the face of the earth. Imagine that, when he's got the whole money for you know, all these lands, all in his coffers. And he's a king that is a righteous king. You know, in today's terminology, the Jews call a person like that a righteous Gentile. And God blesses him abundantly for the sake of his people, Israel. And that's exactly what he told Abraham, and later on Isaac, and later on Jacob. Those who bless you shall be blessed, those who curse you shall be cursed. And here is a king who is a blessing, you know, an Egyptian king, a blessing to Israel, and therefore he's being blessed. And so it is to this very day, and that's a part of this promise. I will go down with you. You see, I'm going to be with you, and when I see people who are cursing you, I'm going to curse them. And when I see them who are blessing you, I'm going to bless them. So God is involved in the lives of his people, in spite of them, and to this very day. And some people have forgot that, obviously the children of Israel don't even know who they are. But one of these days their eyes are going to be open, and they would recall all those cases in the entirety of their history, you know, in captivity, or outside of their own land of Israel, and all the time that God had intervened on their behalf. So there is going to be an awful lot of praise given to God in the future, when their eyes are open. And so this is what we see here. All the money ended up in Pharaoh's house. You know, he didn't steal it. He sold them food. And when the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, "Give us bread, for why should we die in your presence? For our money fails." No more money. And Joseph said, "Give your cattle, and I will give you bread for your cattle if money fails." Now you see here something that is totally different in Joseph than in the later descendants of Joseph. You have the foreign edge. Joseph gives, you know, money to everybody, you see, and he's asking for nothing in return oftentimes. In reality, Joseph is not that stupid. He gives money, foreign edge, yes, but on the other hand, you know, that makes it possible for him to have his corporate America spread worldwide. So, you know, he ends up getting a good return for his money. But nevertheless, oftentimes he gives without any accountability on the part of those who receive it. And several times we see that God is condemning Joseph or condemning Israel for giving the oil and you know, the things that God gave Israel, giving it to the Gentiles, to the nations, where God was not interested in Israel doing that, because those were alliances not according to the will of God. And to this very day they have many alliances like that. And God wants to be the one to bless nations who are blessing Joseph, not, you know, those who turn around and reward Joseph with evil. And many do it, unfortunately. And they're going to do it in the future, and that's exactly what God said. You know, those alliances that you made, you know, and all the things that you've given them, that I gave you, you're doing it because you want lovers, they're going to turn against you. And so, yes, God, you know, wants Joseph to be a breadbasket of the world, but, you know, for people who are going to be responding in like kind, in like manner, and seek the faith and the religion of Joseph also. Not just are there for the money. Anyway, you see Joseph here. He said, "You give me your cattle, and I will give you bread for your cattle, if money fails." And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses and for the flocks and for the herds and for the asses, and he fed them with bread in exchange for all their cattle for that year. And when that year was ended, they came unto him the second year and said to him, "We will not hide from my lord how that our money is all spent, and the herds of cattle are my lord's." In other words, we don't have that either. So imagine how rich Pharaoh is becoming at this time. Abundantly blessed. And mind you, he's extremely pleased with Joseph. extremely pleased with his servants. And now the children of Israel, the sons of Jacob, end up caring for all these flocks, all the flocks of Egypt. So all of Goshen is full of cattle. And a lot of that became a property of Israel also. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.